Number one.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, You and I Just Talk. We're here at Tina's studio in Wichita, Kansas. I'm your co-host, Max, sitting here with our other co-host, Miss Tammy. Hello, Tammy.
All right. Hello. Glad to be here.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this with me.
Thanks for allowing me to be your co-host. I'm honored.
And I think the smart thing to do right now is, I think, share a little bit about ourselves and who we are in relation to each other. If you're ready for such talks.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, let's do it.
I'm Max, Maximum James. I'm 25 years old. I live here in Wichita, Kansas. I have a background in videography. That's what I've been doing since a young man.
Absolutely.
And how do I know you? You, Miss Tammy, are my best friend's mother, Caleb's mother. And we met.
Facts.
We met when I was a young, lost man, a young kid, a child.
That's debatable. We might come back. We might circle back to that.
We'll circle back. But I was a lost child, and you were a mother to me. You were my mother figure for a long time. Still are. I think this podcast is fascinating because, one, you're not my mother. And two,
I am not.
You're much older than me, but I feel like we have always gotten along on a real level. And a lot of people don't have relationships like this.
I agree. No.
There's a lot of people who are motherless running around, fatherless running around, and don't get the opportunity to do something fun with their parents. Anyways, I can keep going and we will circle back, but Miss Tammy, take the floor. Tell me about tell the audience who you are and what you are and why you are and what are we doing? Why are we doing this? Who are you?
So, tough question, because when you are when you get to my age, so considerably older than you, I'm 55 now, you get to my age and you start thinking about who you are. And then as a woman in the U.S., I'm at the age where you start to become invisible. Mm-hmm. So like nobody looks twice at you anymore. And you just kind of, I don't know, you're like cracks in the sidewalk. Like nobody ever looks at you anymore. And so for me to try to say who I am today is like only measurable to me by the most important relationships in my life.
Yeah.
So it's not that, no disrespect, no downplay at all, right? To whatever role you play as a corporate mom, a successful mom, whatever. But for me, the most important relationships in my life are those that I have with my children. And that's how I identify myself. So anything else that I've done, education, professionally, all of that is obsolete,
yeah,
to me in comparison to being a mom. And so that's the most important role that I have in my life. So other things that I do, we may talk about my career, we may talk about my education, but absolutely, hands down, being available and serving my children is the most important thing. And we can talk about why, all the things that my kids have been through, maybe that comes later.
Yeah.
But to me, that's the priority. And for, I don't know, why are we having this?
Yeah, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Like, we're having this conversation because you and I are born 3 decades apart. Mm-hmm. And you are one of the brightest young individuals that I know. Like, you're incredibly intelligent and have great insight and empathy. And I think it would be really great to dialogue with you about how we both see the world right now and how our mutual paths have influenced where we are today and how we view where the world is going. So this is why I think it could be of really intriguing value. And if I might add, I think it will be really good for me, for my own personal growth. Mm. So I'm really excited to hear, you know, your thoughts and ideas, because I work with a bunch of people who think just like I think.
Yes.
And I like for that to be challenged. I like to think outside. Mm.
You think I'm going to challenge you a little bit? You think I have different views than you? You think so?
I hope so.
Yes.
I hope so. And if you don't have different views than me, then I think that maybe you come from, or you look at things from a different perspective, even if we land in the same place.
Sure.
I think that hearing your perspective is going to be a value to me, and I mean, it's going to help me grow as a person. But we may find some things that are really similar.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that's the beauty. I don't think anyone's doing this right now.
I can't wait to find out what that is.
Yeah. No one's making a podcast with a mother that's not mine and a son. No one's doing that. This is why we're different. True. We're moving real different.
That's true. And so I'm just going to say right now, Caleb, you're going to be hearing this. My children are going to be hearing this, that, like, that's how I view you. I view you as one of my children.
Why? Why? And you don't have to get too soft or too sobby.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to be so sobby if you tell me.
Well, this is whatever. The first episode, and I figured we need to get context. We need to
absolutely.
We're gonna get sillier eventually, but we need to let them know why now. Why are we doing this with each other? And why am I? And you don't got to gas me up. I'm not asking you to gas me
absolutely
up.
Absolutely not.
You please know, don't gas me up. But just tell me, why am I kind of like a son to you? What are the if someone else wants to be your kid, if someone else who isn't your child hears this podcast, we're like, damn, I want Tammy to be my mom. What do they have to do to, you know, qualify?
That's a really interesting question, because I'm not sure. It's not a formula. Right. I don't think I can make a formula for it. But I think that at the time, several things. One, when I met you, you were at what I think the most difficult age for any child, difficult age of development, and that is in that preteen situation, or like you're just becoming a teen. It's so awkward, it's so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I look back, it is the absolute worst time of my life.
Yeah.
100%. I don't know who you could ask in America. You could pay them $1 million and say, please go back and do that again. And they'd be like, keep your $1 million.
Right.
So first of all, I feel like I met you in a very, a very formative time. It was a very vulnerable time for you as well. And then the other thing was, and without like revealing too much about what was happening at the time, I felt like after you had been introduced to my son, he was at a very vulnerable state in his life, and it was really obvious how good you were for him.
Mm.
And that was really compelling to me. So you were not only somebody who I saw as vulnerable, but also I saw you as somebody who was really supportive of my son. And I knew that you being a part of his life was something that was making him complete.
Mm.
And so I really wanted to encourage that relationship. And the more that I encouraged that relationship, the more I got to know you personally.
Yes.
And as I got to know you personally, then it made me want to invest in you and your creativity and your dreams and your person. I wanted you to be able to accomplish all the things that you wanted to accomplish in life. So along with that, what I knew was from growing up myself, I knew that there were some people in my life who were really impactful in helping me pursue or even begin to think that the things that I wanted in life were possible. And I knew how important that is for individuals, both you and my son, how important it is to have somebody who's on your team. And I didn't know you. I didn't know you well enough. I didn't know who was on your team saying your dreams can come true. You've got what it takes to do whatever you want. But I knew that I wanted to be on that team. So whoever else was in your life, maybe that was doing that. I just knew that I wanted to be one of the person that said, I see what you could accomplish and I want you to know that I believe in you.
Yes. And I think without you, without that support from you growing up, I think me and Caleb wouldn't be as close as we are, clearly, obviously. With your support, supporting what me and Caleb are doing, not questioning what we're doing. I'm growing up making music where I'm cussing and I'm being crazy and I'm 13 and I'm saying crazy shit and I'm making videos that are edgier and being a goofball, but not being questioned and only being supported. Yeah, I don't know. I think with you, my relationship with my bestie is stronger than, was stronger because we had a mom who wasn't doubting us or questioning us. Because, you know, we got parents out there who are like, oh, you're not What you mean you're not going to college? What you mean? Like, you just like believed in us. You're like, oh, well, if Max isn't going to college, then he's still able to do whatever he wants.
For
like,
sure.
If he's not going down this route, I still believe in him. Same with Caleb.
Absolutely.
You just believed in us, and we didn't go to college. We didn't do the traditional things. We're not looking at, I don't know. We didn't choose very solid career paths, but we're stable. And I think with the support system that doesn't question or doubt you, that's sick. Anyways, what's your favorite football team?
Well, that's a great question. But can we just circle back for a second?
Sure.
Because you said no questioning and no doubting. But the thing that I learned, and I learned it from you and from Caleb, was no judgment.
Mm.
Like, no judgment. And I come from somewhat a conservative background. There's very definitive lines about right and wrong and the paths you should take. And one of the things that I learned from Caleb in particular was that the path to success is not linear.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't have to be linear. So you can't say, okay, I'm going to graduate from high school and then I'm going to go to college. And maybe in college, I'm going to meet the person I'm going to get married to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to get married. And then I'm going to move into my career. And then I'm going to have children. But because of some of the things that I experienced with Caleb from his even early grade school years on, I recognize that there is genius mm-hmm. and potential and power in things that are not conventional.
Mm.
And so by the time you entered into our lives, I knew that there was a path to incredible success if you could step back and quit judging by the traditional paradigm and say, okay, there's value and great things that could potentially happen in here. And you can either try to restrain that and not even restrain, oppress is the word I'm thinking.
Oppress, that's a great word.
You can oppress the genius to try to make it fit into the mold that takes a linear path, or you could step back and open your eyes and just see what happens as a result.
Mm.
But that was really something I understood before I met you. And so it was really cool that when you stepped in, we were already in that frame of mind. And there's a whole nother story that we'll talk about later.
Yes. But I think that's so important.
About that.
I think it's so important. That's something I learned from you, is that's important. That doesn't want to raise my kids. Do what you want. I mean, give them guidance, but like,
right.
Do you, boo. Do you. And just trust in them and believe in them. And yeah, I don't know.
Now, can I get super biblical on yours for a second?
Drop some biblical.
Okay, so there is a scripture, and the scripture says, train a child up in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that that means train them up in the word of God, and they're never going to depart from the word of God.
Yeah.
And my interpretation is that if you train a child up in the way they should go, that means that you accept that your child is a uniquely created individual who has a purpose to serve on the planet, and that service, that purpose is unique. It's different from anyone else's. And if you cultivate the God-given gifts of that child, then they will ultimately
Sheesh.
Grow up to be who they're created to be.
Yeah.
But you can't do that if you're trying to get that child to conform to somebody else's ideology
make
of who they should be.
You make a child Mormon.
Or what? Or, I mean, you could say Mormon. You could say Hindu. You could say Muslim.
Yeah.
You could say
Buddhist.
Fundamental evangelical Baptist. You could say Methodist, whatever. You could say any of those things. But until you can just say, okay, I recognize that you are uniquely created, like, by this divine God who's already decided how they're going to gift you. And my job isn't to control it. My job is to cultivate it and let you be who you're supposed to be. That's
the key right there. That's the key. You're dropping keys.
It is the key.
You're dropping keys.
I don't know that I'm dropping keys.
You are. First episode, you're dropping keys. You're dropping
mother
wisdom.
I just know that that is my interpretation of that, is that when I train you up in the way you should go, I'm just helping you be who you are always supposed to be.
Damn. Damn. When did you know you wanted? Okay. One more question, and then I want to know your favorite football team.
Okay. Tough question.
Maybe this is TMI, but did you know you wanted to be a mother?
Yeah.
You knew. You were like, I'm on mom mode. Like, mm-hmm. I'm capable mm-hmm. of being a mother.
And it wasn't all that I wanted to do, but I thought being a mom was the most amazing thing, and I wanted to have 6 kids.
Word. Out the gate, you already knew this is the vision. Like, I'm going to have 6 kids.
And FTR, I have 6.
Wow.
I gave birth to 4, and I've taken on 2 more.
Wow.
I was gifted with 2 more.
Oh, you going to cry?
Don't cry. Not to cry.
Please don't cry.
I cry. But you and Margo are my 5th and 6th.
So sweet. Love you, Tammy. This is real. This is the intro, y'all. This is who we are. Tammy's a mother, and I am simply a child. And
yep. I love that.
We love that.
And love that so much.
I love the title of the podcast, You and I Just Talk, because that's exactly what we're just about to be doing. We're about to be learning too much about each other. Like, what's your favorite football team?
That's unfortunate that I don't have one. But for me, a good portion of my life was in Nebraska. You probably don't even know
that.
So my favorite college team is the Cornhuskers, the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Oh, no. Who are the Cornhuskers?
I'm sorry?
Is that an NFL team?
No, it's college ball.
Oh, yeah.
College ball.
Cornhuskers.
I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska. And like when I was in middle school, I got to meet somebody named Turner Gill, who played for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And the Cornhuskers are my family's favorite team. So if I had a team that I really liked, it would be the Cornhuskers because I have some connection with them.
Yeah. What's the Cornhuskers mascot? Do you remember? Sounds horrible.
It's a Cornhusker.
What is a Cornhusker? What is that?
Okay. So... like, this is a whole story, but corn husk, you know what the husk of a corn is?
Like the green part.
Right. But the green part is not edible.
Right. You peel it off.
You peel it off.
Right.
And so actually there were people when I was in middle school and their jobs would be to be a detasseler, which is crazy, right? So like when you peel the husks off, there's like those thin golden threads that are still attached to the
little strings vibe.
Yes.
Okay. I haven't seen this.
They would go as middle school young kids, and they would go work on farms, and they would pull the husks off, and then pull all the tassels off as well, so that the corn could be done with whatever needed to be done. If it needed to be like cut off and put into cans, or frozen, or just sold as whole corn cobs without the tassels, then that's what kids did in Nebraska when I was younger.
That's some labor. Were they getting paid for that?
Yeah, they got paid for it. I'm not sure they got paid well, but it was like
it's not free child labor. It was
No. It wasn't free at all. But you could be a detasseler. So the corn husk is the thing. And then for my half of the family, we are Spanish. And so the outside, the husks are dried, and then they become what's called hojas, and then we wrap them around tamales, and then you steam them. You steam tamales inside of the corn husk, which has been dried in. So anyway, there's that too. But anyway, a detasseler, could you imagine that as a job? And it was hot. You worked in the farm, and there was no air conditioning, and it was miserable.
It sounds like a job that a robot can't take over. I think you need children hands for that kind of stuff. It sounds like you definitely need children doing that job.
Sure, but I'm 55 and that was more than 40 years ago. So maybe a computer, maybe some kind of machine does it now.
No one's building a corn ripper robot.
You don't think there's a corn detasseling robot?
Not yet.
We should look it up and then we'll...
follow up.
Folks, we'll let you know next time whether or not there is an automated detasseler that we didn't know about
in the last
42 years.
It's wintertime right now.
It is.
It's about to be -7 Tuesday. That being said,
surely not.
Seasonal depression. What's up with that? Do you believe in that?
I do believe that.
You get depressed?
It's literally called sad.
Sad.
Right? Seasonal affective disorder.
Mm.
100%. I think that's genuinely a real thing.
Do you deal with it?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. I don't.
Have you ever dealt with it?
No.
So how do you feel when it's cold then? Like, you just don't care? You just are like, all right, it's fucking cold.
No, I don't care. So here's like, so different people have different dispositions, but I know that seasonal affect disorder does exist for many people, but I don't typically, I'm not somebody who wrestles with it. So I know this is really ridiculous. You're going to think this is really crazy, but let's share a story.
Okay.
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, share it.
Okay. So in The Matrix, I believe it was the third Matrix, right?
Yes.
The third Matrix, Trinity's in this spaceship or whatever.
Who's Trinity? I understand none of the Matrixes.
Are you joking right now?
I swear to God,
I've
never seen Matrix.
Oh my gosh. So I believe it's the final Matrix. And so in The Matrix, it's a future of our planet. And in our planet, it had, I'm not sure what had happened, if it was war or whatever, but it had been like completely covered to the point that everybody who was actually on the planet could never see the sun.
Mm.
There was so much debris from the war, whatever it is. So in this scene, Trinity, she's like shooting out to get away from something.
Yes.
And she gets over kind of the general atmosphere. And for just a couple seconds, she comes out and she sees the sun in the distance. And she's never seen it her whole life. Like no humans have seen it their whole life. And so she sees it and she's in total awe of the sun. And then, of course, she dips back down and it's gone.
Sure.
Right. So that's my picture always. I know no matter how cloudy it is, no matter what's happening, above the clouds is the sun. I know it's there somewhere. And if you've ever been on a plane and you like it's like really crappy and raining or whatever, and then you get up to 30,000 feet and you get above the storm,
yes.
The sun is shining and you can see it out in the window. It's there. Mm. So I've never had an issue with that seasonal affect disorder because I know that the sun is there. I know it's there. It just takes time for the cloud to break. And then also, you want to hear something else? I'm talking way too much, but I'm going to keep on going.
No.
There's another show and it's called Sense and Sensibility.
Word.
Super old book. And one of the characters says, it's about to go raining out. It's raining outside. And she takes her sister and they're running. And she said, let's go find a piece of blue sky. Like it's raining or whatever.
Yeah.
And so she's pulling her sister and she's like, there's some over there. Let's chase the blue sky. And so that's my theory always, that whenever it starts raining, I know there's a piece of blue sky somewhere. And if I can't see blue sky, I know the sun is above the clouds somewhere.
You're so optimistic.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? You feel like you have to be optimistic?
No.
You just genuinely are optimistic.
No, I've always been that way.
I know.
It's dangerous. Don't be that optimistic. Like, bad things are happening in the world.
Talk about blue skies.
Absolutely. Because you're looking for blue skies and you think the sun is coming and then you get slammed and somebody's like, I don't want to be married to you anymore. You didn't see it coming.
But there's still a sun. But the sun still exists.
The sun's still shining and the blue sky's there, but my whole life is ruined.
Yeah, but my husband.
Tell me, what do you think about seasonal affect disorder?
It's super real, but I don't think it's... When I was in Georgia, I was living in Georgia for the past 4.5 years.
Pretty sunny?
It's very sunny.
Yeah.
But that is where my seasonal... What is it? Advent disorder?
Affect.
Affect disorder.
Affect.
With an A.
A-F-F-E-C-T.
Seasonal affect disorder. When it was so hot and humid... That's when I was like, I'm going to kill myself. I hate this. I'm not going outside. I was heading to my room. I was hiding in my room during the sun.
You want to exist in a planet where it can be spring and fall
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
No summer, no true winter.
Does that exist? Is there a state where they're rocking like that?
No, not in the U.S., but there is a place in Africa.
Where is it? Where is that? Do you know?
I believe that it's in the Congo.
Where? And they're living comfortably?
Mm-hmm. Mm. They are living comfortably. But unfortunately for you, they've ousted all the people who are of European descent.
Damn. They're not fucking with me?
No.
But they got good weather?
They have great weather.
But they're not fucking with me.
Yeah, and the people who have left there are like devastated that they can't live there anymore.
Because
it's a beautiful, beautiful country. Don't quote me on that. It could be someplace else because Africa's a really big continent.
It's big.
So we're not even going to talk about this, but I would love ADHD to be on the topic.
Let's talk about it. I deal with it.
Do you?
Well, yeah. I was... medicated for a while and then stopped medicated. Then I was medicated again. Then I stopped medicated. I don't know why. I just got lazy, like didn't refill prescriptions and then it just disappears.
Wait, so here's some questions. When were you diagnosed? Did you agree with the diagnosis?
Mm-hmm.
Were you able to recognize any of the both positive and negative impacts of that diagnosis? And then what happened with the treatment?
Well, I'll tell you, the real tea is as a kid, as a teenager,
realty.
During my drug phase, we were experimenting with acid, mushrooms, Vyvanse. Yada, yada, yada.
Oh, wait. Vyvanse is actually a prescription drug.
So that's what healed me. When I took Vyvanse off the record for the first time.
Okay,
and I went to school and I was able to focus.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I need to be on this. But my friend gave me some Vyvanse and I took Vyvanse and it healed me. I was like, oh, my brain is so clear. The thoughts are gone. What is this drug? And why am I so locked in? I'm sure it does that for everybody. And I'm sure everyone feels great on Vyvanse. Maybe not. Maybe that's not true. But I know I felt great. And I felt ready to work.
Let's go back to, so when you said the thoughts are gone, what you meant by that is like the racing thoughts.
The racing thoughts were gone.
Okay,
they're
let's go.
Done. Mm-hmm. They're gone. So I'm able to, I want to be at school.
Gotcha.
Let's work. Let's do
you
this.
You want to be at school?
I wanted to be at school. Vyvanse,
how old were you then?
I was 16.
And prior to that, you were not wanting to be at school?
I was just, yeah, I wanted to make videos. I wanted to make music. I wanted to be outside of school. I wanted to hang out with my friends.
Because you had so many racing thoughts and ideas that you could not.
I couldn't sit still. I'm not.
Keep talking.
So I took Vyvanse. My friend gave me some Vyvanse. I tried this, dude. And I tried it and it was awesome. And then I'm like, okay. Then I reported back the other day to my friend who gave me the Vyvanse. I'm like, dude, that was fire. They're like, you should probably get on it then. I was explaining to them how it made me feel. Mm-hmm. Like, damn, it sounded not fun and more helpful. Like, it sounded like you weren't having a... It sounded like it actually helps you instead of you having, like, a fun time.
Yeah.
It sounded like you needed it, bro.
So for somebody...
It's fun.
Somebody else who doesn't need it, it's like a good time?
It's like a good time. You take some Adderall or some Vyvanse and you go party. Stimulants. Stimulants are fun.
Oh, you're right.
Stimulants are fun.
No, not if you have ADHD.
Not if you have ADHD. You can I can fall asleep on them.
They just make your world number...
Exactly.
Your world is normal.
Fall asleep on 30 milligrams. So
give me some uppers and I'm normal.
And I'm chilling. And I feel like I can exist.
Take a nap.
Anyways, I have ADHD.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's go back.
Let's go back to ADHD.
Yeah, we're going to cut it back to this.
We both have ADHD. Did you know that?
Are you prescribed to stimulants?
No.
What do you want to treat your ADHD?
So I was never diagnosed because I was raised in an era where that just didn't happen. But I experienced a lot of social rejection because ADHD, I was not nearly as charming as you were.
Oh, stop it.
But for me, no, you were like really charismatic. And so it was not exactly the same for me. What I found is I was really impulsive and I would often say the wrong thing at the wrong time. Like I wasn't aware of social clues and I was breaking social norms, but I didn't realize that I was doing it. I mean, as far back as... Like my most traumatic memories of it, I was like 7, 8 years old when I was like behaving inappropriately, but I didn't know that I was like, I knew that it was unacceptable, but I didn't know why. And so it went on for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And I got diagnosed with adult ADHD and I was 41.
Whoa.
So I had never had any medication for it or whatever. There's a whole, like, I would like to end my life whole situation that, and we can talk about it at another time, that led me to get my ADHD diagnosis. But because of all of that, I finally got, I was assessed, had this ADHD diagnosis, and I was also hypertensive because I'm 41, right?
Yes.
And hypertension was... considered hereditary.
What is hypertension?
Is high blood pressure.
Oh, okay.
So I was hypertensive. And so they were like, it probably isn't a good idea to put you on a stimulant because that will just increase heart rate and increase your risk of you being hypertensive. And I was like, okay, so what are we going to do? And they put me on bupropion, which is slightly different, than what happens with a traditional stimulant. It has more to do with dopamine. Anyway, so I'm on, which is also commonly known as Wellbutrin.
Have you ever taken stimulants? Be honest. Have you ever been on a stimulant before? Speed, you know what it does? You know what it feels like?
I have not intentionally taken
speed.
I knew what it was called, a speed at the time. I knew that. But I was not aware. Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. You sped out.
Yes.
Okay.
It was not good.
And it didn't make, it wasn't nothing.
No,
it
just makes me chill.
Makes you exactly
chill, because it was it's so weird doing this with my son. Is I know my son is listening, but it was my it was the first time that I smoked weed. And the weed had, it was laced with.
Oh, shit. Did you have a weed phase?
It was, no.
No, never, I didn't have a weed phase. No. Mm-mm. You weren't watching Rick and Morty and smoking weed.
Like, am I gonna? No, absolutely not. No. And I'm like, you don't want to be like
weed socks and a bucket hat and
absolutely not. I was just hanging out with my sister who was 3 years older than me, and we went to somebody's house and they were getting high.
Weed laced with stimulants,
and
they were passing
they were passing the bud, and I was like, okay, show me how to inhale, and I did the thing, and. That's what I did. And it seemed like a really powerful, crazy crazy experience that I never wanted to experience again.
I can't smoke weed. I can't either.
So I did much later in life. I attempted it again and it made me paranoid.
Psychosis.
It was not my thing.
It throws me in a psychosis.
I was so paranoid. It was the most ridiculous thing. I was sitting on somebody's back porch shivering and shaking.
Yeah.
And like it was ridiculous.
The one time I smoked weed in Georgia was my girlfriend at the time left her weed and I was stressing. I was like, damn, this looks delicious. And I want to see how
but
it makes
it's
me
not.
Feel. Oh my God. I'm telling you, I hit it once and I got up. I kept turning on and off my light and I kept filling up my bathtub and then draining it and then walking back and forth, pacing between my room and my bathroom, turning on and off lights, hiding underneath my blanket. Then I'm like, oh, I'm tripping. Real paranoia.
Did it went into psychosis?
Oh, and my heart, I was having a heart attack, went into psychosis mode. Like I was literally pacing. Thank God no one was home, but I thought I was going to have to call the hospital and like do all this extra shit. But then I'm like, no, that's crazy.
And you're thinking, it's just weed.
My girlfriend smoked it all the time.
It's just weed.
She loves it. Like, she's chilling on it.
She just sits on the couch and nothing
happens.
She sits
on the couch and she loves life.
Right. And she's like
I do it. I want to jump out the window. I want to find the nearest window and hop out. So I don't know. Weed doesn't work for us. Maybe that's something to do with our ADHD brains.
Absolutely. It has something to do with our ADHD brains and our ability to metabolize. Anyway, we can go into those things, but like what happens in the prefrontal cortex. But no, absolutely. It's not for us.
No, it's not for us.
It's for them. Everything, we can end this podcast,
this episode
of saying everything is not for everybody.
Everything is not for everybody. That's
it's not.
Right. No. You and I just talked with Max and Tammy. Thank you for listening. Tune in next time. Goodbye. Yeah. That was beautiful. That was fun.
I love it so
much.
Stop saying things that are going to make me cry.
Next episode, we won't.